Blog Talk Radio.
Brother African, we welcome you to Africa on the Move. That's right, Africa's on the move. And tonight we have a very interesting topic in which we'd like for you to engage in. The topic tonight is on the more things change, the more they remain the same. That's right, I said it. The more things change, the more things remain the same. I think when you talk about that slogan, it's sort of fitting to our historical experiences since arriving in the West, particularly the United States. And to discuss the particular topic, the more things change, the more they remain the same, we have with us Brother Haki, who is a community and political organizer. Welcome to Africa on the Move, Brother Haki.
Thank you, Brother African.
And before we get started, Brother Haki, for those who may not be familiar with you, just briefly give us a little summation of who you are.
I've been a community organizer for over 28 years. I've been organizing people around, you know, daily struggles like housing, food, shelter, that kind of thing. I was responsible for running a program called Africans in Motion in Brooklyn, New York, in which the primary focus was to educate young brothers and sisters around self-identity in terms of improving their self-esteem. So those are the kind of things I've been involved with for over 28 years.
Okay, good enough. Let's jump straight to the subject matter, Brother Haki. The more things change, seem like the more they remain the same. Historically, when we look at the plight of African people as they was traveling across the Middle Passage to Morocco, we realized that once we arrived on these shores, we were brought here for several reasons. But I think the major reason was to be put in a situation of economic bondage. That is, to be workers or be to enslave and create wealth for the capitalists. And the process of being put in that predicament, one of the features that they made sure that we would not be able to succeed in is the feature of being self-sufficient and the question of being self, having the essence of self-determination. That was one of the original goals when we first arrived here. Now, moving forward to 2012, when you're talking about the more things change, the more they remain the same, there seems to be there no more physical bondage right now, they're not, but there's still a bondage in which African people are not entitled to the right to their self-determination, the right to govern themselves. Would you sort of agree with that assessment, or if not, you know, sharing your position on this question? In essence of arriving here, has that situation really has changed for our people?
No, I think you're right, Brother Africa. I think the old cliche, the more things change, the more the rain is saying, is apropos when it comes to the massive African people in society. One of the things I think we have to understand is that when they brought our ancestors over here, it wasn't with the idea that they would be equal or that we'd be in a position to practice self-determination. That's not why we were brought here. We were brought here for a couple of reasons. One, because of the skills we possessed in Africa. They needed those skills in turn in the United States. And secondly, they needed a workforce. Now, one of the things that is very interesting historically, they say is that the Mexicans and the Chinese didn't work out in terms of the work under the hot sun. The perception was that coming from Africa, a region which is hot, that we'll be much more productive in terms of under, you know, very harsh conditions. So there was a misnomer, there was this misconception in terms of equating, you know, skin color in terms of we're productive or in terms of the ability to actually pump out work. So I think we have to understand first and foremost that's why we were brought here. Now the question in terms of how the method in which they employ in terms of ensuring that we don't reach self-determination or that we don't get a concept of who we are. One of the ways they did historically is just chattel slavery, in which it was just, I mean, brute force and terrorism, in which we were intimidated. Those among us who stood up, those among us who took a stand, we were killed, we were beaten, we were brutalized in order to intimidate the rest into submission. And so that's historically what they've always done. And this process in terms of brutalization of African people didn't change it all the way up until the 1950s, and some would argue even to 1960s, the whole concept of utilization of African people in society continued. Now, if we fast forward to the 21st century, you're absolutely correct. The enslavement is not in terms of physical brutality, but it's now more intellectual. They have a situation now where, when it comes to those in the African community with visibility, if those individuals don't kowtow to the interests of those in power, then they simply deny that power. So those Africans in power understand, in order to maintain that power, that they understand that they have to play the rules of the oppressor. And this is one of the things which gets into this class issue when a lot of us don't want to understand. You see, this desire to be just like the oppressor is one of those things, variables that impacts on us, in which so many of us have yet to come to the realization that, in fact, that the issue of class is, in fact, just as oppressive as the tactics of the oppressor. And so now, by using class, they can do a much better job in terms of oppressing us. They can do it from a psychological point of view. So whenever those among us who stand up and say, wait a minute, you know, in the unequal schools, lack of access to jobs, certainly lack of access to jobs with a lack of housing. So anybody in the community who stand up to talk about, to articulate these issues, and they always can point to some quote-unquote African who have made it. And as such, those Africans who have made it have internalized all the worst in terms of what it is to be African person in society. And so, therefore, it's very, very easy for them to also demonize, to vilify African people and simply say, well, your condition or the situation you find yourself in is because of your own laziness, it's because of your own ineptness, it's because of your own stupidity. That's why you're in the condition that you're in. And it's easy for them to believe that, because that is a class thing. In other words, the class thing can't exist unless there's a psychological need to keep someone down. So therefore, in the African community, we have to recognize the role of class in terms of facilitating oppression among our people in the society. And so it is a very, very, very big problem, and it's something that we've yet to grasp because it's a psychological issue. And most of us have yet to come to the issue or come to the realization that the psychological oppression is, in fact, something we can only overcome through self-critique, education, and actually dialogue. And that's the only way you're going to do that.
It's an interesting statement that you made earlier in your presentation about being brutalized, and use the word terrorized, and just trigger something, a response to me in terms of, I'd like to raise this with you. As we talk about this theme, the more things change, the more they remain the same. Of course, they have used physical tactics to try to psychologically and physically intimidate us and keep us under control. And today, I think that when one look at the behavior of the state, in terms of the police force and how they are dealing with people of color, particularly African people, there seems to be a continuation of using this methodology of physical brutalization to intimidate and terrorize African people. How would you view that assessment? Because I'm saying, when you look at this question of the right, where the police force are constantly harassing young African males, searching them for no reason, when you look at this whole question of just outright something like physically murdering youth in the cities for no legitimate reason. You have many cases that we can talk about. What kind of message does that send to our people psychologically, and particularly our African youth? Isn't this just a continuation of the original issue of bringing us and brutally terrorizing us to maintain, to keep us in a state of enslavement?
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely correct. I think one of the things is that people are under misconception, and in fact, the police are here to protect people. It has nothing at all in terms of protecting people. When you look at the origins of the police, it comes from the overseer. That's where the police come from. The overseers, historically, as we understand, those individuals, many times poor white folks, who were responsible for making sure that the Africans who were enslaved would not escape the plantation, and that was their role. the natural evolution of the overseer is what we know today as the police. And so their function has nothing to do in terms of protecting people. It has to do with protecting the power structure or the 1%. One of the things that, and when you talk about this brutality as it relates to law enforcement, one of the things that that's very interesting, there's a former federal judge named Bruce Wright out of New York. Referred to him as Criminals Bruce. And he wrote a book called Black Justice, White Justice. And it's very interesting. Historically, the police have always used the 38. In the 60s, they decided that 38 was no longer appropriate for their purposes, and that they started using the 45s. But the reasoning being that a 45 could penetrate the hide, this is their words, the hides of African people much easier than a 38. And so, therefore, they made this gun change with, in particular, with in mind, you know, the subjugation of African people. So there's no mistake about that. Now, the male treatment of African people is a part and parcel result of the criminalization of African people. One of the things that is perception is that crime is synonymous with black people, and it's very, very easy for men in society to perceive, you know, African people as criminals. When you look at the socioeconomic situation that African people find themselves in, that's the desire to survive. Many times we understand there's a system in place that prevents them from achieving that to their true extent. And so therefore they always find themselves, you know, in a very difficult, untenable position of actually trying to survive. And so ultimately what happens is that the poorer you are, the least educated you are, the more that you have to do those kind of things which are, in sociological terms, maladaptive in terms of being able to survive. So if you engage in crime, it's because you want to survive. But this whole question in terms of engaging in crime has nothing to do with skin color. It has to do with class. Poor white folks do the same thing. But poor white folks don't get depressed. Black folks get depressed. I mean, and when you look at television, they're depicted as the criminals, whereas white folks who commit crimes at a much higher level than black folks are never depicted on mass media as criminals. Often when white folks are involved in crime, often the media makes excuses by saying that it's a sociological issue, not a criminal issue. Poor African people get involved in crime, it's not a sociological issue, it's just that they're genetically born to be criminal. And so this is a misconception that has persisted throughout the time. And this is one of the reasons why the police target, you know, in particular young African males. Now, let me just add one other thing too, Brother African. This whole thing in terms of drugs, in terms of a tool to make sure that they continue to battle up African people. Now, one of the things that these people in positions of power understand, that one way you can destabilize a community is to turn it against itself. Mm-hmm. And so therefore you had the advent of drugs, you know, being proliferated throughout the African community. And so what happens is that by these drugs proliferating in the African community, you create a situation where people are scared, people don't talk to each other, people don't communicate to each other. You create a social condition which says to the kids, this is all people can be, all the people can hope to aspire to. So it's a conscious decision that you make. Make no mistake about it. The infiltration of drugs into the African community is no mistake. And if you recall the case of Freeway Ricky Ross out of California, when he brought the drugs were supplied to this guy Jose Blandon, who was received the drugs from the CIA, who in turn sold the drugs to the African drug dealers in the cities. They did it specifically because they understood the impact in terms of drugs in the community. They understand quite precisely that it would destroy the African community, and that's what it's all about. And this is the struggle we have in terms of getting our young people to understand, even though we understand you got to have money to survive, you got to need money to eat, you know, to pay your rent, you do need money, and we do understand your predicament. But the much broader picture is that, you know, by engaging in this kind of self-destructive behavior, what are you doing in terms of your future generation? So there's a question that we try to convey to young people to get them to understand that you might benefit in the short term, but in the long term, you destroy yourself. And so this is the thing that we try to get people to understand. So this whole notion of targeting, you know, African people as criminals, it's just part and parcel of law enforcement.
And a continuation to maintain dominance to keep us a slave. And,
that's correct.
And let's continue to discuss this theme. The more things change, the more they remain the same. In terms of the area of education, one of the things in which you do to enslave a people is that you have to be illiterate and not to be able to read and write and think. The number of brothers were here to do this. And since the so-called invention of public schools, there seems to be, Brother Hackett, that we have made progress in the area. We have made progress in terms of getting us the ability and the means to be able to see and conceptualize our realities. But at the same time, there has been some contradictions in the process that I would like to acknowledge. We know that the education that we have received has not been the type of education that would truly liberate us as a people, but it is an education that gives us a foundation to begin to challenge some of the realities that we live and understand how and why things are done the way they are done. Now, right now, there seems to be a continuation of that policy. When I say continuation of the policy, I'm not ensuring that we become enlightened and become so-called conscious of our realities through this method that we call education, is that there's a tack to get rid of public schools. They want to disband public schools and privatize them again. And again, Brother Hackett, this seems like one of these cases, more things change and more things remain the same. Seems like it's a continual battle now to make sure the African people do not find themselves in a position where they can compete intellectually and get a better understanding of their realities by denying our future youth the right to knowing how to read and write and articulate. What's your position on that?
Well, I think that there is no question in terms of the colonial system with its way to education that exists in America. And if you look in Africa, well, you see also, even though it's largely African population, that this education system is predominated by Western individuals who, in fact, determine the curricula for little African kids. And so this notion of in terms of a colonial system in terms of education is also very important in terms of the power structure maintaining control. You see, education is only useful to the extent that it teaches an individual to truly be in position to self-actualize. One of the things you don't want to do in the context of the capitalist system is have people self-actualize. You want the people to internalize any problems they perceive with the world. You want them to internalize, so therefore they begin to see the problem is not so much with the world, but the problem is within. And so this is the role of education in terms of making sure that our people are conditioned to internalize our suffering and therefore believe that, in fact, the problem is within us and that we're in a position to actually solve our problems. Now, this colonial system that I keep talking about has – keep in mind that people have always agitated in terms of true education, in terms of talking about the contributions of African people, making damn sure that African kids get a firm understanding of who they are and their contributions to humanity. In fact, it's important that African kids understand the origin of human beings and understand in that context, understanding that they are the kings and queens of civilization. But those in power understand that they cannot allow these kids to come to that knowledge in terms of who they are. And so this colonial system has to remain intact. Now, because it's been under attack by various organizing groups, various groups throughout the country, agitating, for more balanced educational system, they realize that change in terms of the curriculum is inevitable. And so now what happened is that in response to a lot of that agitation that's taking place in the community, now what those in power want to do is they want to privatize education. So what happened is a couple of things happened. First, you limit the number of kids based upon economics who have access to education. Secondly, those who do have the economics, who have access to private schools, get a doubling down of the BS that historically exists in terms of respect to the education curriculum. So therefore, those individuals in private schools, you think the public school is pretty bad in terms of teaching kids their history. Now, the private schools are going to be even worse. And so we can anticipate a doubling down in terms of the dumbing down the students in the private schools. The most we can expect from private schools is for kids to be able to articulate, the oppressor's line. we don't expect people to come out of private schools to be able to contrast or to analyze or actually look at the world and make sense of it and to be able, you know, to dissect it, to understand your place in the world and what can you do in terms of changing that. Private school is not going to do that. And so this is the dilemma that we find ourselves confronting with today in terms of public school, private schools. And unfortunately, there are many in the African community who subscribe to the notion in terms of vouchers is a solution, you know, for our people, vouchers. Their vouchers are, in fact, a solution to our people. And all vouchers does is make it possible for middle-income, upper-middle-income African people, you know, to be in a position to actually attend schools. It does nothing in terms of addressing the overall needs of the poorer African masses, you know, here in the United States. So, therefore, I think that this whole schism between public school and private school is just another tactic in terms of making damn sure this colonial education our kids are starting to receive will become more intensified.
You know, just adding to your point, Brother Hackey, one of the things I think African educators don't realize with the new philosophy of trying to advocate more private schools and voucher schools, there also is an undercurrent attempt to get rid of African teachers, where we would no longer have access to directly teaching our kids. Even today, we may have access to teaching our kids, but we still don't control the curriculum that we sought to teach them. So it has limitation in and of itself. But one of the things I just like to allude to our audience, to the African educators, this whole movement also is a movement to get rid of them. And I don't think they're conscious of it, because many of them have chosen to still stand on the sideline, just wait and do nothing. We don't realize, you know, this is also a battle of their survival as well. But let's move forward. You raised earlier that one of the things you have had the privilege to do is work with African youth to try to work with them in the capacity of lifting up their self-esteem. Psychologically speaking, I think, Brother Hackey, how has the media changed from its inception to the present day as relates to the damages that it has caused when it comes to the images that they have portrayed to our people? What is your take on the impact of media, and more particular Hollywood, and how that has had an impact, negative impact, on the behavior and the minds of our people, particularly the youth?
I think the media has been particularly damaging to the psyche of black kids. Unfortunately, one of the downsides in terms of, you know, parents out here trying to work, trying to survive, you know, make a living for their children, often the TV becomes a substitute, babysitter for many, many kids. And as such, kids are privy to a lot of kind of ideas, which are not necessarily ideas that are geared toward, their self-esteem or desire to self-actualize or desire to even feel good about who they are. So I think it's been a very, 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 very dangerous kind of thing. I think that one of the things that in this whole process, we've got to understand that many, many African institutions also complicit in terms of this whole problem in terms of, you know, feeding our kids all the negative kind of images. When you look at BET or you even look at radio and you look at the kind of programs that are being pushed and you look at the kind of songs that are being played on radio, many of these songs are not empowering. Many of these songs don't come from questioning what's going on in society in terms of making things better, or even the issue in terms of improving our kids' self-esteem. On the contrary, it's geared toward reinforcing all of these negative concepts that our kids have internalized in terms of what it is to be an African person in society. So I think one of the things the parents have to understand, and I understand this is very, very tough for a lot of parents because you don't have the means, but you have to find some other way to provide for your kids in terms of their needs other than television. I think television is probably the most destructive thing in a society in terms of adverse impact on the psyche of our children. But I think it's something that as a community we have to address. Individually, it might be a very difficult thing to do given the whole question around economics. But collectively, working together, it's something the community has to do in terms of providing, you know, those kind of programs, the kind of care, which is geared toward enhancing our kids' self-esteem, improving our self-image, and making sure these kids understand clearly their contributions and their expectations in terms of what it is to be an African person in society.
Okay, in closing, Brother Hackey, we got about 5 minutes left. I would like for you to touch a little bit on this subject area. And this subject area is that you alluded earlier that normally there's a system put in place that has been designed for our people to behave in a certain way. And that's what we're talking about in this case is the capitalist system. Now, I understand the capitalist system, and we're dealing with the thing, the more things change, the more they remain the same. There was a theory that if we participate more in the system, our people get greater freedom and have greater liberty. Today, we found this not to be true. That's to say that we have more political leaders or figures inside the Democratic Party who are mayor, governors, the mayors of cities, from the biggest cities in the United States. And we may have a elected president who is physically viewed as being an African, but it can clearly be challenged in terms of mentally if he is an African in terms of his allegiance. Now, given the fact that I stated that, how do you explain the contradiction? We have more elected officials today. We have a African president residing in the United States of America, but yet our people are going backwards and worse off today. We are more powerless as a people. Can you speak to those contradictions?
Well, I that's the point I made earlier. I think a lot of these individuals in positions of power who have been legitimized by the power structure come from the same colonial educational system. So the kind of colonial education they receive, they simply bestow those kinds of values in terms of what they learn, what they understand to be true. One of the things is that in the context of capitalist society, once you start to internalize this notion that money is the be-all, end-all, then, of course, once you have that mindset, then truly you're vulnerable to manipulation, you're vulnerable to self-hatred, you're vulnerable to prey on those who are perceived as weaker. So I think in that context, African people are no different than other people in terms of internalizing those variables in terms of what it is to be, what it represents a capitalist system. All the ruthlessness, the greed, the selfishness, the uncaring, the apathy, all of that stuff is part and parcel of the capitalist system. And you can understand that these quote-unquote leaders, or these, at least these ones that the media tells us are leaders, they have internalized the worst. And so therefore this whole self-hatred thing gets played out. But not in the sense that they call each other N-word or anything like that, but it plays out in the sense that they're very apathetic toward the interests of African people. In fact, they won't even articulate the interests of African people. On some level, perhaps they're embarrassed to even deal with the issue of African people, because there are a lot of African people, middle-income African people, who like to believe that, in fact, the problem is not systemic, but, in fact, the problem is of people who actually like to believe that. And so, therefore, if you believe in the fact that people behave badly simply because they're born that way, then there's, you have less incentive to actually challenge that belief. Now, but if on the contrary, contrastly, if you understand that a system in place, institutions that produce the way in which people behave, then if you understand that reality, then you can begin to challenge those institutions, those systems, which creates this problem in the first place. But understanding that, it's going to take a tremendous amount of work. And first and foremost, there's a whole section in terms of internalizing the self-hatred that exists in our people. The struggle has to be, that kind of struggle has to take place. Now, of course, people who are infected with self-esteem issues or self-hatred are not going to summarily, allow themselves to have that kind of discussion. That discourse simply won't take place. But it has to take place if we're going to move forward. And I think one of the things is that when you talk about this whole dichotomy between, class, the problem is class versus economics versus politics, when you get the problems that those who err on the side of economics, what the position is that everything is okay and all you have to do is play ball, and if you play ball and get the money, everything's going to be okay. But as you alluded to, we got all these mayors, all these these people in Congress, even got an African president. But the material condition, the psychological condition, the adverse impact on people haven't gone anywhere. In fact, they're getting worse.
Okay, on that note, Brother Hackey, we're going to have to stop you. We're less than 45 seconds. I would like to just share with our audience that the lessons of this particular program today is that you must remember that we got to keep our eyes on the prize. We must realize that in order to be free, Africa must be free. We are on the path of going backwards on the path of being enslaved again. Anytime when someone controls those necessities for life, whether you're talking about food, water, shelter, we are now talking about someone enslaving you. this whole thing, the more we change, the more they remain the same. In our reality, we can see this. We can see this reality is true, and we need to change this. Until next time, when there's no struggle, there's no progress, we must truly struggle for the liberation of our people. We'd like to thank Brother Haki, and we'll see you on the next program of Africa on the Move with Brother African. We thank you.